Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Barbara.
It's concerning, but we will prevail.
I think we are prevailing.
Yeah.
So for folks who want to know what we're talking about, I'm just going to jump right into the first question and ask you, what is PFAS?
Yes. So PFAS are this whole group of thousands of chemicals that were invented in the 1930s, and they all have a similar chemistry. And what it does is it makes them really useful for all kinds of things. They make things stain resistant and water resistant, and because they're so great, they've been used in tons and tons and tons of products since the 1950s, right? So they're in stain-proof clothing, and they're in waterproof food wrapping, and they're in firefighting foam, and they're in tons and tons of consumer products and things we use all the time. And it's still being used today.
Well, I ask you that because we're going to be talking about PFAS quite a bit for these next 2 days, starting now, how it's in our environment and our bodies. And today we're going to start with our environment, the PFAS in our environment, specifically our water supply.
Yes.
So tell us, how does PFAS get into our water?
Okay. So it's in, like I said, it's in all of these products and things. And one of the main things it's been used in is firefighting foam, right? Yep. So this is where people started to see it getting into water, right? So anywhere that you have a military base or like an airport or a fire training academy or somewhere where they're using a lot of this stuff, over time, the PFAS will sink into the groundwater, right? Mm-hmm. And they last a really long time. They don't break down in the environment. That's why they're called forever chemicals. So they seep down into the groundwater and eventually get into drinking water. And those are the hot spots now, a lot of those, you know, places where they use the firefighting foam. But they're also seeing it coming out of, like, landfills or coming out of factories or industry that use it for manufacturing processes, coming out of there. So that's all those different ways are how it gets into the water.
Tell us, how much is too much PFAS in water?
Well, that is such an interesting question, Daryl. Okay, so for drinking water, we're talking about drinking water.
Yeah.
Right now, there are no federal regulations for drinking water.
None.
Right? None for PFAS. A handful of states have regulations. There's about a dozen now-ish. Massachusetts has some of the strictest drinking water regulations in the country.
And That's good to know.
Go Massachusetts, right? So they said it's 20 parts per trillion, which is about the amount of a drop of water in a swimming pool.
Okay.
Okay. Now, here's a little twist, though, which is kind of interesting. Last summer, the EPA came out with guidelines for how much PFAS there should be in drinking water, and they came up with a number close to zero. So they said this stuff is actually, like, really bad. But they still don't have any laws, and they're supposed to come out with a regulation in December, and it hasn't come out yet. So they say now the EPA is supposed to come out with a regulation next month.
Mm-hmm.
And because they said these guidelines so low, they think it's going to come out really low.
Okay, so if a city's water supply has unsafe levels of PFAS, how can they fix it?
Yeah, this is the good news.
Okay.
Is that it is fixable. So
Barbara, come through with the good news.
Woo, woo, woo. So in Massachusetts, they started testing all the water systems in like 2020. And I think 170 water systems had levels above this, the legal limit for Massachusetts. Yeah. And so as soon as you get that, you got to like shut the water off or change the water or whatever. So almost all of them have fixed it now. And there's different ways to fix it. You can either shut off the water source and use a different one, or you can put in these big charcoal filters and that will filter out the PFAS. So
is that
there
like
are
a giant Brita filter?
It is. It is exactly like a giant Brita filter.
Okay.
Yes. See, nobody thinks that's funny, though, when I say that to, like, water guys. Anyway, so I'm glad you came up with it. The problem with this is super expensive, right? So in my story, I went and looked at this one town, Littleton, which is about 10,000 people. It's a pretty small town. And they have spent so far $30 million to deal with the PFAS, right? And, like, their usual water budget is, like, $4 million or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's if you look at, like, every town in Massachusetts probably going to have to do this. It's just a ton of money. So what they've had to do there, they've got some grants, they got some state money and stuff, but they had to push a lot of the costs off onto water customers for, like, I think it's, like, a 30% rate hike over time. I actually talked to the general manager of the water department. Here's what he told me.
It's a lot of money. It's a strain, especially during these economic times. And people are pulling at everything to try to pay their bills. But they understand this community is always, you know, willing to pay for clean water.
That was Nick Lawler with Littleton Light and Water.
They must have money out there in Littleton.
They don't.
Damn.
Yeah. Right.
Let's say there's a situation like that where in Littleton, folks don't have a lot of money to eat a 30% increase to their water bill.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any help that's available, say, from the state or federal government who might be able to supplement?
That's a great question. Not yet. There's a bill, a big bill and a couple smaller bills in the legislature now that will create like a PFAS trust fund to help with this, to help towns and communities deal with these costs, right? There is some money coming in from the EPA to help for these cleanup costs, and that could help reduce it. So there are, like, some money coming in, but it's not... Like, the EPA yesterday, they announced that they're going to give Massachusetts $38 million.
And you just said there was a town that had to spend $30
million right.
for the Big Brita.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Barbara Moran.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So we just got a picture of what it's like for people who use municipal water.
Correct. Yep.
What if you use well water? How does one make sure that their water supply is safe?
Yeah. There's no laws regarding private wells and PFAS or regulation or anything. So you're pretty much on your own if you have a private well. There's about 500,000 people in Massachusetts that have private wells. I was like, well, this is interesting. I wonder if people test. What do they do? So I went out to Stowe, Massachusetts. I went there because the whole town, everybody's on a private well. And I did talk to this one guy, Bill Watcher, who's lived there for like 30 years. And he decided to test his water just to be safe. He doesn't live near like a contaminated site or anything. But he's like, well, I'll just check the boxes to be safe. Mm-hmm. And he had a really high level. It was like 52, more than twice the limit for the public water system.
I mean, you've lived here for 37 years and you've brought up two children here. And so you don't know what the long-term health implications are for all those years of drinking maybe tainted water.
So Bill tests his water and it's twice the legal limit.
Yep.
What do you do if you're in his situation?
Yeah. So he didn't know what to do, right? Because there's no rules for private well owners in the town or the state or anything. So he just like went on the internet. He eventually found a filter, like a small filter that he put in under his kitchen sink. And the good news is it's working. He emailed me yesterday and said they tested the water coming out of the filter and there's no detectable PFAS. The bad news is that he had to pay for the whole thing himself, right? So test your well is a couple $100, right?
Okay.
And then that filter he put in was like $600, but it was just his kitchen sink. Like a whole house filter usually costs like $5,000.
Mm.
So there is this PFAS bill they're trying to get passed in the state will set aside money for private well owners to pick up some of that tab. But, you know, there's a lot of private well owners. This is kind of interesting that don't test or don't want to test. And one reason is they can't afford it or don't want to pay for that, right? And the other reason is like they don't want to know because they're afraid it's going to lower the value of their house, right? Or they're afraid, oh, if it turns out they're contaminated, maybe they're going to get sued by their neighbors for contaminating other wells or something. You know what I mean? They're scared of like liability. If you own like a farm, you know, people are really nervous, private well owners, about this, this whole situation.
Who's responsible for this?
Ultimately, the manufacturers are responsible, right? The big ones are 3M and DuPont. And Maura Healey, when she was attorney general, had a lawsuit against them and other manufacturers of firefighting foam. They are being sued by everyone. Right now, it's a lot of finger pointing going around. Like, oh, your fire station contaminated my well. So the fire station has got to pay for it. And the fire station's like, hey, it wasn't us, man. It was the foam.
Yeah.
You got to sue the foam people. And the foam people are like, it wasn't us. It was the chemical company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of all that going around. And I think that's going to be going around for a while as the people see the cost of this, you know?
And what seems to make it complicated is that PFAS serves these functions that are very helpful. I mean,
it's
how
great.
Can you be mad at the firefighters for using fire foam to put out fires?
Right. That's the thing. It's great. And then the problem is you don't want to replace it with something just as bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which keeps happening, these regrettable substitutions, you know?
Well, I wonder, is there a way for us to continue to use PFAS but contain it so it doesn't contaminate our water supply and our bodies, basically?
There is some discussion in that when you're banning these products, that you allow it to be used in a small number of necessary products, like, oh, I don't know, maybe probably medical applications. And if you're actually tracking it and know what it's in, then that would help contain it more. I mean, right now it's just this wild west of thousands of chemicals and going every which way. So I think, you know, reducing the number of products it's used in and starting to sort of track it more would help keep it out of the environment.
Barbara, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much
Thank
for telling
you.
Us about PFAS and just helping us know more of our environment, the world around us, and how we can perhaps protect ourselves.
Yes. Thank you so much for being interested, Daryl. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. That's WBUR climate and environment correspondent Barbara Moran. And make sure you check out tomorrow's show because we'll be talking more about PFAS and how it can impact our health. And that's our show for today. Make sure you hit us up on Instagram or Twitter at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.